The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, October 12th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, we are jam-packed tonight with Arkansas Fred Barnett to talk Eagles, Bill Meltzer to talk Flyers, Fred Hugo with his Fred and Butter time. The Pick'em Pool has a new winner this week. Carl's Cards update. Like I said, we are jam-packed.
Halapuli Vati Vita. Halapula Vati. Oh, sorry, Bill. I'm still practicing saying that name. But, yeah. Number 86, Fred Barnett joining us in a minute to talk Eagles-Redskins. Bill Meltzer previewing the Flyers season. Lots to discuss, so let's get to it.
Well, we're going big V. That's what I'm going with, because that's something I might be able to actually understand, because it's going to take me a long time to pronounce that name.
Yeah, I'm with you. Halapulivati Vaitai. I like it, though. 6'6", 315 pounds. The guy's got size. Let's see if he can play.
Let's go big V. All right. Well, hey, before we get started, let's let our listeners know that we will not have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question tonight, because we have no time to fit it in with this action-packed schedule. So we'll bring it back next week. We'll be giving away that signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles tight end Trey Burton next week. So be ready for that. So with that business taken care of, let's welcome tonight's guest making a return visit to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, former Eagles great Fred Barnett. Welcome back, Fred.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Doing
we
fantastic.
Are doing great. Cool. Hey, Fred, this is Chet. Let's get right to it. You watched the Eagles-Lions game on Sunday, I'm sure. Lots of factors, I know, but why did the Birds lose to a team they should have beaten?
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, there was a movie that came out a few years ago that was called Any Given Sunday. And
yep.
One thing about the NFL, you know, even if you have a team that's supposed to lose a game or a team that's supposed to win a game, When you come out firing and everything is working for you, you know, you can have a good day. And I think, in my opinion, I think the Lions had a good first half. And it was just enough to win by the skin of their teeth, because I felt that the defense kind of gave up a few points. They, you know, put the Lions in positions to put 21 points on the board. And you know, after the first half, they just kind of shut them down. But I think it was too little, too late, and there were some questionable calls here and there. You know, of course, Wentz has his first interception. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what route the wide receiver was running. Aguilar was running, so it's. You know, you come away with a loss that you're supposed to win, you know, what can you do? I think it's very the one positive thing that I could take from this game is, number one, how Wentz stayed poised. He kind of never lost it. I think that Coach Peterson did a great job in just still keeping it simple, not trying to take too much at once, and just kind of getting the team back in the game. The defense was solid, of course, in the second half. And I think if they had 5 minutes left, 5 minutes more, this game would have been the Eagles game. So, you know, I think you could take something positive from it, but at the same time too, this was a team where, you know, you're supposed to come out of Detroit with a win.
Well, Fred, nobody knows more about the wide receiver position than you, and I'd like to see what your thoughts are on this wide receiver group as a whole. And I guess my take on it is they're not very physical. They're not a very physical bunch. What's your take?
I agree. But I think at the same time, too, what you have to look at is what you're working with, and that's not from the wide receiver standpoint, but you got a quarterback that's able to get them the ball and put the ball in some tight spaces. I think Aguilar, there was one particular catch he had, and I was just like dumbfounded that Wentz even threw that ball, but Aguilar caught it. I think it was across the middle. But Wentz, I have to give credit to Wentz for the success that the wide receivers have had thus far. I think, of course, Aguilar is a work in progress. I think he's getting better and better. I'm hoping, of course, that he continues to get better. Matthews is solid. I would love to see him more outside, but I would give them a B- right now because of and as you mentioned, I don't think they are as physical as they need to be. And from a team perspective, I think you need that guy who's going to line up, at the top of the numbers every play and just burn it down the field or give you a comeback or give you an out route and just be a threat to just go deep every time. So it seems that we don't quite have that right now. And I look at that, the last play actually when Wentz threw the interception, I didn't hear much about, what play was called, but there's two deep routes that looked like that could have been. Interestingly, Wentz threw the ball outside and Aguilar was inside. Well, if Aguilar had a post, he was in the right position. But if Aguilar was supposed to run a go route, he was in the wrong position. And it seems like Wentz threw the ball to the outside. And it's all about timing. It's not a situation where the quarterback just drops back and looks at the receiver and tries to wait till he gets open. He takes a 7-step drop and he throws the ball to a point. And that's something that's practiced every day. And it seems like Wentz did that. So I'm not sure if Wentz missed him on a post or Aguilar was in the wrong position when he should have ran a go route instead of being inside and running a post route. Even if a cornerback or a defensive back kind of shatters you on the outside, you still got to fight to get wide. And what I didn't like about what Aguilar did is that, once the ball is in the air and you feel that you can't get it, you need to do everything possible to make sure that the defensive back doesn't catch the football, even if it just grab him and just, pass interference and you get the ball back and you got another down. So, I think there was some learning curve. There was a learning curve in this game because, once again, we feel that here was a team that they should have came out with a win. It was, and it's kind of a shocking, a sock in the eye walking out of there being a team or letting a team beat you that you feel, you had more talent and that you should have won the game.
And now on Tuesday, Fred, we got the official news that Lane Johnson will be suspended for 10 games due to his PED use. How big a blow is that to the team's fortunes? And how is a rookie, this Halapuli Vati Vaitai, going to step in and take over at right tackle?
Well, the interesting thing about it is this is the pros. And I talk to a lot of my friends about it, and they just kind of sometimes – are critical of guys, and once you leave the college rankings, you are lining up against 11 pros. And when you're playing college football, and whether you're on offense or defense, whoever you line up against, you probably line up against two professional players out of 11, say on the average. And when you line up in the pros, you line up against 11 pros. So this is a situation where, his backup is just going to have to come in and make things happen. I mean, I was a backup for 3 games before Mike quit, got hurt. And although I showed some positive, production during the preseason, I had to be ready to come in and shine. And, I was able to do that. And from a standpoint from a team perspective, of course, you have to some degree, take a step back and know and understand that, one of your key offensive linemen will be out of the game, and you have to prepare that backup to do just as well as he did. And sometimes it could be a crash course situation because, you know, when you're a backup, you're just kind of learning what to do and not necessarily hoping a guy doesn't get hurt. But, you know, once you kind of thrown in the fire, I think sometimes it depends on the individual. You know, the more responsibility they have, the better they are. And so hopefully his backup, I'm not going to try to say his name either. Hopefully his backup could take it all in stride.
Well, Fred, you know, we all learn as coaches and players that it's always a bigger part of the game than the referees. But
yeah,
that game the other day was about as bad a referee game as you could possibly see. And I tell you, I'm still shaking my head over that chop block on Darren Sproles. Once you guys get back into the locker room after the game and through the week, do you look back and say, doggone, that was just brutal, you know, amongst each other that you can't say in public?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And you know, these referees are not robots, you know, and they make mistakes. I mean, that holding call, there was a holding call against a linebacker, one of the offensive linemen. The linebacker
yeah.
just literally gave up on the play and just started – he just raised his hand like as if he was being held. And he threw the flag, and
yep,
it
brought back
me,
a big gainer.
To me that was a flop.
Yeah,
that was a
yep.
flop, and the ref noticed it and say, oh, I agree with you. He's holding you, and you know situations like that. You know, when you go back and look at the tape, and you have to say, what if? You know, and unfortunately, you have to stay focused as a team, because. You know, I put it this way, if I was on the team right now, I would gather the guys together and say, hey, you know what? Look, damn it, we won that game. We won. I don't care what our record says. Right now, we're 4-0, and we need to play like it.
Mm-hmm.
We won that game based on some of the things that happened, based on where we were in the first half after the first half, and what we did in the second half, and the calls we got. From a negative standpoint that were against us, we won that game. And I'm taking on the attitude right now that we 4-0 and we're going into Washington. We're going to kick butt. That's the attitude that you have to have. That's the mental attitude that you have to have. And I think it transitions into physically going out and getting it done.
Well, Fred, we are now one quarter of the way through the Eagles season. Real tough stretch of games coming up. In fact, there's not one sure win on the schedule the rest of the way, if you ask me. The next three games alone, at Washington, home against the unbeaten Vikings, who'll be rested and coming off a bye, and then at Dallas. Is it crucial the Birds win at least two of these next three here?
I think so. And I say that because of the capability of this team winning two out of the next three. And the thing is that I'm going to put the responsibility on the Birds to do exactly what they're supposed to do. You know, when I look at the Washington game, I don't think Washington is what they are, what they look like, or what they seem to be. I think the Birds can beat Washington. I think Minnesota's going to be a tough one. But at the same time, too, Minnesota's coming off a bye, and I, to some degree, put Minnesota in the position that the Eagles were in going into Detroit. So you're coming off a bye, you're playing against a team where you know your favorite, but you're playing away, and you're playing against a better team, you know, with the Eagles than Detroit was against the Eagles. So I see them possibly winning that game as well. As a matter of fact, I see them possibly winning all three of these games. Dallas, I think, can be challenging, but from a defensive standpoint, I'm betting on the defensive line to hold them to, you know, maybe under 110, 120 yards rushing, and you know, and them getting to Dak Prescott.
Fred, we know obviously that Carson Wentz has been a huge surprise and in a very positive way, but I want to ask you about Doug Peterson. And, you know, it's 10 years as an NFL quarterback, pretty much all as a backup, longtime NFL assistant under Andy Reid. How surprised are you at how well he seems to have a handle on his ball club? And in particular, his play calling has been pretty solid.
It's been very solid. I don't want to say I'm surprised. I mean, once he was put in a position as a head coach, I really didn't know what to expect. You know, I thought it would, you know, I think we all thought we would see Andy Reid because he was, you know, under Andy for so long. But at the same time, too, here's a guy who, you know, played this game at this level and really understand, you know, the ins and outs from an offensive standpoint. But I wouldn't say that I'm very surprised. One particular game, I can't remember exactly which one. I think it may have been the Pittsburgh game, or maybe another game. He did something. There was a fourth down that they went for it, and I think it was like a fourth and three. And they made the fourth and three, and the next play he went deep, and he threw it. Went through a touchdown pass, and that's the kind of attitude and the kind of play calling that lets me know that he understands the game. Now, it's one thing to call plays. It's one thing to script plays against a certain defense. You have to know what you're doing, and at the same time, too, you have to understand what you're doing. That let me know that he understood that once he executed that fourth and three or that fourth and four, whatever it was, he just went for their throats at that point, and that was the right thing to do. Any other coach would have just kind of like, okay, we're first and ten again. Let's just go through this, you know, let's just start our offense up, and he just kind of knocked it, you know, just kind of knocked the defense out. So it just that was a pleasant surprise to see him make that call, and it was very gratifying for him to show that he really understood what he was doing. And you know, it kind of takes a lot for a coach to call certain plays and take chances, because, you know, at the end of the game, at the end of the day, you got to stand in front of people and explain yourself. And, you know, it's a tough sport. And I think it's even tougher being a head coach, you know, with calling plays.
Hey, Fred, I have one more question for you. Gary Cobb,
sure,
a few weeks ago posted a picture of you and Harold Carmichael together, probably my two favorite Eagles receivers of all time, just saying. And Fred Hugo, uh-huh, who joins us on the show later on, says you are his favorite wide receiver of all time. So a little love for you right there. Anyway, you were drafted in 1990. You played six great, uh-huh, seasons with the Eagles, of course. Were there wide receivers in the 1980s or early 90s that you admired or patterned your game after?
Well, I hadn't talked to Jerry in a while, but Jerry Rice was a guy who, you know, I just kind of kept my eye on. And, you know, every once in a while, we talked during the season. We met him at the Pro Bowl and, you know, got his number, and we would talk, you know, pretty frequently. And this guy, he just kind of set the standard, in my opinion, which is why he's probably the greatest receiver to ever play the game. And here's a guy who, you know, when it was time to go to work, you know, he was always a step ahead of all the other wide receivers. And I started to kind of pattern my game after him. Of course, I didn't have a West Coast offense. But, you know, I just started to pattern a work ethic after him. I can even remember sometimes during practices, you know, our defensive back would look at me and be like, hey, why are you going 100 miles per hour? We're just kind of, you know, going through the plays. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get it right. And, you know, here's a guy who wasn't perfect, but he worked so hard to be the best that he could be. At times he looked perfect on the field, and he never really overworked himself. He just put in quality time in preparing himself to get on the field. So he is one guy that I really, you know, admired, and really, you know, he made the game look easy. You know, he made the regular guy think, I could, the way he did that, I could go out and do that, but you cannot do it, you know. And he worked so hard to where Sundays was almost like an off day. And I can remember working, I can remember during my off season, we would, Randall and I and Calvin, we'd go to Phoenix, and we'd go in, you know, 110 degree weather, and we would be working so hard during the off season until, you know, once we got into season, it was a piece of cake. And he's one guy that I really admire, and from a standpoint of being on the field and preparing himself to be the best that he could be.
Pretty good choice.
All right. Well, Fred, one final question for you as we finish this up. We're a quarter away through the season. We're 3-1. You care to make a final prediction?
It's hard to say. I'm hoping that we are at least, say, 12-4.
Boom.
You know, 11-5. And once we go, and once, you know, you get into the playoff, you know, of course, barring injury, and once you get into the playoff, I think it's kind of like resetting and starting a new season. You know, everybody's excited. I think the Eagles' goal right now is to just play as hard as they can and just get to the playoffs. I wouldn't necessarily say that you shouldn't have expectations of Wentz right now, but at the same time too, I think when you hear someone singing in the shower and it sounds good, you want to say, hey, look, you know what? I need to put you on stage. So I think Wentz right now need to have a eye to eye with Peterson. Hey, look, you need to get on stage right now. And what I'm looking forward to from him and Peterson right now is for Peterson to get him to a point to where he is, where Wentz is running this offense. I saw a couple of plays, where the play that was called just ran right into the teeth of the defense. And I feel that if Wentz would have had the ability to say, let me check out of this play and get to another play, I think he has the ability to do that. So I think over time that Coach Peterson will give him that ability to do that. And I'm talking like a Peyton Manning type of level. Say, hey, look, you know what? I'm going to call two plays in the huddle. And as I get to the line and I see the defense, I'm going to call the play that I want to run. And inevitably, Peyton Manning is really the offensive coordinator. And before Wentz was drafted, I saw some of the highlights, and I could see him kind of giving the dummy call just to get the defense to show what they were doing, and he'd call out, and the defense not going to change the play, so and he'll change the offensive play, and boom, you know, he has a big play. So when I saw that, it let me know that he had the ability to do that. You know, when a guy has a great arm, when a guy has the patience to, you know, go from first receiver who's covered, second receiver who's covered, to the third receiver, and you got a completion, that's special. And that's something that I think you really have to cherish and you really have to take care of. But at the same time, too, you have to give it more responsibility and let him work.
Well, I'm with you. All right, Fred. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming in and joining us, and we want to do it again, hopefully on the road to the playoffs.
Let's do it, man. I'm
all
sure.
Right.
Let me know.
Thanks, Fred.
Okay.
Great
thanks,
job,
Fred.
Buddy.
All right.
Take care.
Well, hey, Chet, it's hard to believe that it's hockey season already, with the Flyers opening up this Friday night in L.A., followed by Saturday night in Arizona. And I know you don't watch hockey until January. You're one of those fans. But there's no better way to kick this thing off to provide a preseason preview than Mr. Bill Meltzer. So, Bill, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back, guys.
Hey, Bill. Yeah, as Bill said, an exciting time of the year for fans of the orange and black. So let's get right to it. Bill Meltzer from HockeyBuzz.com. The big news, Mr. Meltzer, is that 19-year-old rookies Ivan Provorov and Travis Konecny have officially made the roster for the season, which gets underway Friday night. How good are these kids, and what impact will they have in their first year in the league?
Yeah, it really is an exciting thing. As I think most people know, Ron Hextall is very, very conservative, even reluctant to hand NHL jobs to players their age, and you know, made very clear all throughout even last season when they were dominating junior hockey that you know, those guys are going to have to come in and play at a very high level to earn jobs out of camp, and they earned it. Nothing was handed to them. Konechny led the team in scoring in the preseason, and Provorov led the team in ice time, and both guys played at a very high level. You know, they were you expect that they're going to be some growing pains. All young players, no matter how talented, have them. And, you know, there'll be streaks and ups and downs during the season, but these are two very talented players with an ability to come in and make an impact on the team. You know, I think Konechny is going to put up some points right away. He has a level of speed and creativity to him that, and also aggressiveness too. Even though he's a small guy, he plays a very aggressive game. Provorov plays a, you know, defense in some ways is a much harder position to come in as a young player and play that forward, just because there's, you know, when you're making a mistake, it stands out more than a lot oftentimes the forward. He plays a very mature game, and not just in the big ways in terms of his skills, just in subtle ways, the way he reads the rush coming at him, the way he angles guys on the boards, makes the first pass out of the zone, and the way he bounces back. Sometimes you see with young players, you know, everything's going well, and then they make a mistake that ends up in their net, and you know, and it could send them into a tailspin in many cases. In Provorov's case, when he makes a mistake, he does what a veteran does, and he puts it aside and he keeps on rolling. So, you know, I think both guys can both come in and over the course of the season make a difference in what was already a playoff team. So it's definitely an exciting outlook when you look over, you know, over the course of the season.
Bill, speaking of Konechny, 19 years old, 5'10", 175 pounds. So obviously, he's going to grow a little bit because get a little thicker because he's so young. But is he built and able? Do you feel like to take the wear and tear of an entire NHL season at that size? That's a little small.
Well, and that's you know, that was of course one of the question marks with him, especially because he plays. He's a little guy who plays like he's a big guy. He's very aggressive. He's not afraid of initiating contact. He's not afraid to take a hit, stir things up, get in the middle of traffic, all those kind of things. I mean, that is the question mark. But, you know, on the other hand, there are a lot of smaller guys in the league, particularly now, who, you know, who don't seem to have a problem with it. Look at Johnny Gaudreau, who's the smallest guy on the ice every single night, and you know, he's held up to the grind just fine. You do worry about with any player coming out of junior hockey, you do look towards the latter part of the season into the playoffs, so they wear down at all. And that'll remain to be seen. But I think that if there was a question mark as to, you know, whether he can handle the pace, I don't think they would have put him in the NHL this year. Now you do worry about injuries. He did have some injury issues in junior hockey. So that's all stuff that has to be monitored, really stuff you can't predict very well. But I think that just in terms of physical readiness, I think even at his size now, he can stand up to that kind of physical game. I mean, he has to play to some extent, even though he has a lot of finesse, just because that kind of gives him a little bit of edge on the ice. So I think, so to answer your question, yes, I think he can hold up to it.
Let me ask you about a couple of the big names. Jake Voracek had a bit of a down year last year, a real slow start. Claude Giroux didn't do much at all in the playoff series against the Caps. What kind of year are you expecting now from Voracek and Claude Giroux?
Well, Giroux, we'll start with the captain. You know, I think that Giroux had an interesting year last year because his numbers offensively were down. But I think I personally thought that Giroux had one of his most complete years last year. You know, I thought that in terms of getting buy-in to Dave Haxtell's system, a big part of the reason why they got that buy-in as the season went along was because Giroux bought into it, and he sacrificed some points to do it. He killed a lot of penalties last year. This year they brought in Boyd Gordon to take some of the penalty killing burden away from him, which should translate to a little bit more offense out of him. You know, Giroux did have the hip and groin injury in the latter part of the year, which his players generally didn't say anything about until after the season. You know, I think Giroux will have a more typical Giroux kind of year. And Voracek, I expect to bounce back and be fine. You know, he had a big time down year in terms of goal scoring last year. When people talk about the the Flyers' goal scoring problems last year. I mean, a lot of it was Jake, because if you add 10 goals to the team's total last year, which would be an average year for Voracek, 22, then the Flyers would have been 15th, right smack dab in the middle of the NHL. So I think that I think offensively they'll be okay. I expect Voracek to bounce back to 20 goals this year. I don't know if he's going to be in the hunt for the Art Ross Trophy, which is the scoring championships in the NHL. He was right in that race to the end a couple of years ago. But I think he'll be fine offensively. I expect 75 points or so out of him this year. And he's on a line. He's opening the year on a line with Konechny and Couturier, which is a pretty promising line. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Bill Shane Gostisbehere kind of burst on the scene last year, and he was really fun to watch and brought a lot of energy and excitement to the team. 17 goals. Is that something – did he sneak up on people, or is he that good? Is he going to continue to get better offensively? I know he's certainly got to get better defensively, but I'm sure that will come with experience. But does he have the ability to get better offensively as well?
I think he can get a little bit better offensively. Probably not too much. I think he's a little bit of, he ended the league as a little bit of an older player. I think just in terms of experience, as you go along, other teams get a book on you, but you also get a book on who you're playing against as well. I think that knowing where to pick his spots will help him. And I do. I mean, I think that, particularly in the assist department, I mean, I don't think his shot is going to get any better because it's already terrific. I think year in and year out, I think he might have a couple 20-goal years. He might have a couple, 13, 14-goal years. But I think right in that range, anywhere from a 14 to 20 a year is right where I think he's going to score. And I think the assist-wise, that'll only continue to increase. So I think he could get a little bit better offensively. I mean, he's already a very high level there. I do think he's an all-around player, as you just said. His play without the puck could continue to improve, and particularly, more so in terms of decision making than when he's defending. Just in terms of does he make mistakes to get him caught off ice, leading to a two-on-one rush, that kind of thing. I think that some of those mistakes could be cut down. So I think that as he continues to go along, if he stays healthy, I think you will see him continue to improve as well. But he's already mighty, mighty good, and I think he's the real deal.
All right, let's get to the goaltender situation. Steve Mason and Michael Neuvirth are back again. Top prospect Alex Lyon waiting in the wings. I've always wondered in recent years if the Flyers goalies were good enough to make a deep playoff run. So what do you think, Bill?
Well, I mean, I'm a believer, first of all, that defense and goaltending always go hand in hand. I think that if one's either going to bring the other one up or drag the other one down, if they're good or bad enough. And, I think if you look at some of the goalies that have won Stanley Cups in recent years, really, or even if you go back over the last 20 years or so, there haven't been many years where the Vezina Trophy winner has been the Stanley Cup winning goalie. I think it's so much of it's about team play. And I honestly feel that either Neuvirth or Mason are good enough to win under the right set of conditions. I think that saying that you need a superstar goalie is a bit overrated, actually. But that being said, I think both of them are tremendous goalies, and both of them could, at any given time carry the team. And we saw what Neuvirth did in the playoffs last year against Washington. You cannot play any better than that. And although Mason had a bit of a rocky playoff last year, if you remember back to the previous time the Flyers were in the playoffs, when they went 7 games with the Rangers and they didn't deserve to go 7 games, and even Game 7 they lost 2-1, and that was only because of Mason. Mason was tremendous in that series too. So, I think both guys have shown they're very capable goalies, and I think goaltending is the least of the Flyers' issues. I would like to bring up one other point with the goaltending though, that because the Flyers have 18 back-to-back games this year, which is the most in the NHL, having two quality goaltenders that they can both stay healthy is a huge advantage there, because you won't wear one of your guys down over the course of the season. And I think that's a huge advantage. And also the advantage of, when you get to playoff time, you're going to ride the hot hand, and either one of them could get hot. So I think that, I think it's a very good situation for one more year. Both guys are free agents at the end of this year, and then after that we'll see. You mentioned Alex Lyon. Anthony Solars was an all-star in the American Hockey League last year. Flyers just drafted a kid named Carter Hart, who's one of the best young goalies in the Canadian Junior League. And they also have a a Swedish goalie named Felix Sandstrom, who at 19 is already a starter in their top pro league. So the Flyers actually have almost an embarrassment of depths and riches in goaltending prospects as well as defense prospects too. So the future shapes up well, but for the next few years, it's going to be one of Mason or Neuwirth. I don't think both of them are going to be back after this year just because of salary cap issues. But I think the Flyers are pretty well set in goal, actually.
Bill, one final question. We have less than a minute left with you. It is the Flyers' 50th season. I know they have a lot of special things coming up during the year, and they got something pretty cool coming up on January 14th. I know you'll be there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the Flyers alumni game against the Pittsburgh Penguins alumni, and it's going to be really neat. The LCB line is going to be there as an entire line, so it'll be Bobby Clark, Bill Barber, and Reggie Leach. It was announced today that Michael Renberg is going to be flying in from Sweden, so the whole Legion of Doom will be there. Renberg, LeClaire, and Lindros. Brian Propp will be there, Dave Poulin, Tim Kerr, Mark Howe, and you can just pretty much go up and down the list, and you know it's going to be a fantastic game. It'll be very exciting.
Absolutely. All right, Bill Meltzer from HockeyBuzz.com. Looking forward to reading your stuff on there and on Facebook. You always have links to it. So great job, and let's have a great season. And thanks for joining us here on Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks, Bill Meltzer.
Great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, take care.
All right, Chet, let's thank our sponsor shop for Kisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Chet, it's Fred and Butter time with our special guest, Fred Hugo, joining us to provide a breakdown of this week's NFC East games. Fred, welcome back.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Terrible week for me and Chet. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, I'm used to it.
Hey, Fred, I don't know if you were kind of caught in the middle there, but Chet gave a shout-out to Fred Barnett that he was your man.
Yeah, I'm glad for reminding me that. Thank you for saying that. I did hear you say that. That was awesome. Just real quick story. When I was little, I always wanted a Fred Barnett jersey, and we go under the Christmas tree, and my little brother, who at the time was a Cowboys fan, his godfather got him a Fred Barnett jersey, and I didn't get one, and I was so pissed off.
Yeah, Fred's a good guy, and he's a lot of guys' favorite wide receiver, I think.
And more importantly, hopefully your brother has converted away from that star into a real football fan.
Fourth and one was when he turned. He's like, I want to be a Cowboys fan. And we let him in. Or an Eagles fan, I'm sorry.
Fred, before we get to this week's games, how did we do last week? And what are the standings so far between us? And by the way, the Cowboys were a lock. I think I might have heard that last week.
You knew
I thought there
were,
there are no locks in football, Bill, as you tell everyone on Facebook all the time.
Well, that one was because Marvin Lewis can't coach in the National Football League, so that one was a lock.
Yeah, you're right. When you said that last week, I'm like, I forgot about how terrible of a coach he is. But, yeah, me and Chet both went 1-3. You went 2-2, which isn't great, Bill. We just did terrible. But that dropped me down into a tie with you. We're both 11-5, and Chet, you're 8-8.
Woo. Long way to
boy,
go.
Oh, boy.
Long
All
way
right,
to go.
Fred. Well, let's get this thing rolling. We'll start out with the 3-2 Ravens at the 2-3 Giants, followed by the 4-1 Cowboys at the 3-1 Packers, and, of course, the 3-1 Eagles at the 3-2 Redskins. These are going to be three pretty good games.
Yeah, maybe not the first one. So the Ravens travel to the Giants. Giants are three-point favorites. Both teams are coming in on losing streaks. Ravens have a two-game losing streak, and the Giants a three-game. I guess the strengths for both of those teams are they both have a stingy run defense. The Ravens have the third-ranked run defense overall. They're going to get back their starting quarterback, Sharice Wright, and then they'll try to put pressure on the Giants to the right and left tackles with Suggs and Dumerall. The big thing for the Ravens, though, is they fired Mark Trestman this week because their offense was just terrible. They bring in former, we all know well, Marty Morningweg. to take over, who we all know loves to throw the ball. The Giants' strength is stopping the run, like we said, after they were dominated last week by the Packers' O-line. I think they'll rebound this week. I don't think the Ravens' offense is going to be able to adjust accordingly to Marty, even though he was the quarterback's coach. Steve Smith looks like he's going to be out, and they seem like they're struggling offensively. So I see the Giants pulling this one out 20-14.
All right. Neither of these teams has been great this season, as Fred alluded to. The Giants still struggling to put it all together, though, under new coach Ben McAdoo. And Eli Manning, for whatever reason, has never played great in three previous meetings against the Ravens. Even though the Giants are home and are three-point favorites, I'm taking the Ravens to win this one. They're going to win a close one here, 20-17.
Well, I really have a mixed bag on this game. For one, I always like the Ravens because I like John Harbaugh. I like what he's done down there. The Giants are in such disarray. I mean, they just look dazed and confused out there. Eli Manning looks like he's lost. The receivers are a mess. The offensive linemen are fighting with ESPN reporters in the locker room. They got problems. I just don't know that they can continue to play as bad as they are, but I'm going to say it lasts at least one more week, and I'm going to go Ravens.
There you go. Good, you and good. I agree.
I like being on the opposite side of both of you. I like that.
Cowboys, Packers, who you got?
Cowboys are 4-1 visiting the Packers. Packers are 4-point favorites. It's the NFL game of the week. Green Bay has won 5 in a row against the Cowboys. But the Cowboys right now, they look really good. They're on a 4-game winning streak. Overall, the Packers offense is about average compared to the Cowboys defense, which is about average. The strength of Dallas, obviously, they've been playing lights out, and their offensive line has just been mauling people over. I didn't expect how bad they beat up Cincinnati last week. Watching that game, they just moved the ball up and down the field effortlessly, it looked like. The strength for Green Bay, though, is their run defense. So I think it's overall the matchup, they're pretty even, dead on. The only thing will be is the quarterback factor. Who's the better quarterback? And we'll see against Green Bay how Dak does. He's had a lot of time back there, and he looks good. But, I mean, he gets 5, 6, 7 seconds back there. I hope he would be able to make a play. So I think the Aaron Rodgers factor comes in today. They're going to have the edge. They're going to win this one in a close one, 27-24 Packers.
All right. If Dallas goes to Lambeau and wins this one, you might as well just hand the Cowboys the NFC East. That would convince a lot of people that they are indeed the team to beat, probably even me. Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott have been as good or better than advertised. But I see them hitting a little bump in the road out in Green Bay. The Packers, as Fred mentioned, have a real good run defense. That run defense has been really great this season. And I see them holding Elliott in check, not shutting him down completely, but, you know, holding him in check, maybe 80, 85 yards, forcing Prescott to try to do a little more than he's previously been asked to do. And so I look for the Pack to win this one. They're going to hold off the Cowboys 24-17.
Well, I'm going to tell you, my Philadelphia brethren are not going to be happy about this, but I'm going to tell you right now, the Dallas Cowboys are playing the best football in the NFC. I'm not going to say they're the best team in the NFC. They're playing the best football in the NFC. But with that said, they're not playing good enough to go to Lambeau and beat the Packers, who are pretty good. And Aaron Rodgers plays big in big games, and he is going to play big in this one. Jordy Nelson will be spectacular as he always is. I'm going Packers.
Is that one a lock, Bill?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
No, the Cowboys are playing good, fellas. They're playing really good.
Yes, they are. Eagles at Redskins.
All right. Eagles 3-1 coming to face the Redskins. Redskins are 3-2. 2.5 point, someplace 3-point underdogs. The Redskins, man, are coming on a 3-game winning streak, guys. We've been calling them the stinking Redskins every week, and they're on a 3-game winning streak here. Cousins is starting to look like a quarterback again, though he is still missing receivers all over the field. They say he's not going through his progressions. D-Jax has been open quite a few times. He's missed them. For the Redskins to win, they're going to have to establish the run. That's the only way that they can even win this game, in my opinion. unfortunately for them, that's their biggest weakness, and then the Eagles' defense's biggest strength. So if they're able to run the ball, then they'll be able to pick apart the Eagles' secondary, much like the Lions did in the first half of the game last week. So I think the Eagles, as long as they don't have to face the referees along with the Redskins' offensive line, they'll be able to pull this one out. Big V is the big question, and he'll have to square off against Ryan Kerrigan, who got his 50th sack last week. I think the Eagles will establish the run, take the pressure off him from having to defend the pass, and they'll take this one 24-16. And Carson will throw another pick. Let me throw that in.
All right. I really thought this game would be a pick'em with the odds makers, but in fact, as Fred mentioned, the Eagles are favored by 2.5. And that's even after the tough loss to the Lions and the fact that the Skins are on a bit of a roll and they're at home and they've won the last three meetings against the Eagles. The big question is, of course, how will the Birds do with the change in the offensive line now that Lane Johnson's officially been suspended? Big V in there, as we said. Lots of pressure on him. Assuming the line holds up, and I know that's not a guarantee, I look for Wentz to have another very solid outing, and I expect Zach Ertz to again have a big game against the Redskins. He's done that a couple of times already in the past. And by the way, I would be okay if the Skins tight end, Jordan Reed, is not cleared to play. He's had some concussion symptoms, so we'll see what happens there. Either way, my prediction, Eagles 27, Redskins 17.
Well, here we go again. I'm taking the Eagles. I think this is going to be a shootout. I think we're going to get to see Carson Wentz air it out a little bit. I think you're going to see a lot of offense. DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, these guys are good. Jordan Reed is outstanding at tight end for the Redskins. They have an offense. They can score points if Kirk Cousins throws the ball to his team and not our team. He will throw it to our team a few times, though, and that'll be the difference in the game. I've got, in a high-scoring game, Eagles 38, Redskins 27.
Wow. Should be fun.
The only difference we have in all the picks is Fred took the Giants and me and Chet took the Ravens. Everything else we're the same on.
Yep.
You guys are getting smarter. You're following my lead here.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, Fred. Well, hey, another great job as always. Always prepared. Always on top of things. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Have a good one, guys. And thanks for that Fred Barnett comment.
You got it.
Thanks, Fred.
All right, Fred. Hey, Chad, we wanted to mention our new website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, and I know you feel the same way as I do on this, and want to thank the listeners and the Philadelphia sports fans that have reached out to this site. We've had over 900 visitors since rolling this site out last Wednesday night. That is just amazing, and we certainly appreciate it.
In fact, Bill, I think as we went on the air, we hit 1,000 mark, so I'm going to pop the champagne right after the show. We've already fine-tuned it just a bit. We put our latest Vimeo slideshow video piece right on the front page for you, posting some important hot off-the-presses Philly sports articles right there on the homepage as well, blog pieces from us. You have the scoreboard up top. Lots of great stuff on there. Again, a great shout-out to our buddy Matt down in Florida. He did a great job designing this for us. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do so. Once again, it's PhillyPressBoxRadio.com.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned about adding the Vimeos, the other thing, the daily articles, what we're going to do there, we're going to post in the morning, go through and hunt through the sports pages and find what we think are like the three best articles of the day. And there's two today. One is on Big V, one is on Aaron Barber, and the other is on the Flyers and Bernie Parent. We're going to post them so, you know, you can go there every day, check out these without having to hunt through all your newspapers. We're going to try to pick out maybe the best three, one of each sport, if it works out that way, and post them so people can go each day, check them all out.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, hey, again, we appreciate it. 1,000 hits is just amazing. We thank everybody for that. Okay, Joe Visculia was this week's winner of the Philly Press Box Radio Pickle Pool with a 12-2 record. Joe couldn't join us tonight, but shout out to Joe. Great week. 12-2. So in the season standing. By the way, Chet, you were nowhere near 12-2, but that's okay. We'll talk about that another time.
8-6, buddy. 8-6.
There you go. In the season standings, to win the signed Eagles Reggie White mini helmet after only 5 weeks in the books and, remember, 1 week drop. So We have a new leader in the clubhouse. Gene McCann is on top with a 41-20 record. Danny Bevins, Joe, and Jimmy Wilson are all just one game back. There are 26 players within five games, Chet, and there's plenty of time left, as we could see this week. With Joe picked, Joe actually picked up five games in 1 week on the leader. The leader didn't have a great week. Joe had a great week, picked up five games. So even you, Chet, have a chance if you can get it together.
I'm not giving up yet. I am not.
All right. Well, Chet, hey, we have another special guest lined up for next week, and we'll be kicking off the 76ers season like we did here with the Flyers with Bill Meltzer. Who do you have lined up for us?
Hey, who better to give us everything we need to know about the 76ers a week before they tip off their season than a woman who's been covering the team since 1997. From Comcast Sportsnet, you know her, you love her, Dee Lynam, back on the program.
Ah, awesome. And Dee's always got the insight, and can't wait to see her take or hear her take on the big men. That's going to be a lot of fun as well.
Yep. We exchanged texts today. She's ready. She'll be here. She's excited about the season just as we are.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, let's get our signing updates to Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Carl wants to send his thanks to all that came out to the store last Saturday to meet Hockey Hall of Famer, the Golden Jet, Bobby Hull. It was a great turnout for a great guest. Bobby got there early, stayed late, signed everything, took pictures with everybody, and told old hockey stories. And what a better way to spend an afternoon than doing that. So Carl wanted to send his appreciation to the folks for coming out for that. Carl's will be holding a private signing with the Flyers' Ron Hextall. How about this one, Chet? Former Boston Bruin and Philadelphia Blazer Derek Sanderson will be having a private signing with Carl as well. Bernie Parent.
Let's get him on the show.
Yeah, Greg Wozinski and Bernie Parent will be in the store coming up. So for all the details, go to our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, and click on the Carl's Cards and Collectibles banner on the top, and it'll take you to his website and give you all the information. Or stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. As you said, you can visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. Also, Chet, we want to remind you the Otho Davis 18th Annual Scholarship Banquet on November 9th. This is the event promoted by the Eagles and attended by many Eagles alumni. So for information for this event, go to the website OthoDavisFoundation.org or call 856-312-1129. Well, Chet, I have one more topic I wanted to squeeze in here before we do our parting shots. And what it is, I want to ask you, do you remember a time where all four of the major sports in this town had so many promising young players? You know, of course, they have to develop. So for now, they're just promising young players. But we've got Wentz, Provorov, Konechny, Gostisbehere, Noel, Embiid, Simmons, Okafor, a load of Phillies. Most of these guys aren't even 21 years old yet.
It really is an exciting time to have all these young guys in their first or second or third year. All the guys you mentioned, and, yeah, a bunch of Phillies, too, like Franco, J.P. Crawford, who's coming up perhaps next year, Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, who I like a lot. We hope they could end up being very, very good. So in a perfect world, all four teams will be contending for championships within a couple of years. Wouldn't that be exciting?
And in a couple of years, for many years, you hope, as long as the crazy salary cap and all that that comes into play doesn't affect things. But, boy, this looks like if we could be a little patient, I think there's good high hopes on the horizon.
Oh, it's going to be fun to watch. I want to see how the Flyers develop this season. We talked to Bill about some of those young guys. The 76ers have to figure out what they're going to do with all the bigs. But then they have Simmons, you know, coming back hopefully in January, February. They'll probably get another high draft pick in the spring next June. And next year they could just take off. So it's an exciting time to be a Philly sports fan.
Yes, it is. All right, Mr. Chesko, we're getting close to the top of the hour. How about a parting shot for you? I actually have one this time.
Okay. I watch a lot of TV, probably too much TV, but the one channel I watch more than any other is Comcast Sportsnet, checking out at least part of the Sportsnet Central show every morning, Philly Sports Talk every evening, and, of course, a slew of live sports. For the most part, I love it, but I'm a little ticked off at CSN right now. First, they drop Brian Westbrook from Eagles postgame live for no apparent reason. And now, even though there's a lot of excitement about the 76ers, last week for their first preseason game against the Celtics up at the University of Massachusetts when Joel Embiid and Dariel Saric made their debuts, they aired the game using the CSN New England feed. Okay, fine, I got over it, still got to see the game, right? But then Tuesday evening, I sit down and turn Comcast Sportsnet on in hopes of watching the Sixers-Grizzlies game, and they had poker or horse wrangling or some such thing on. No Sixers. I guess there's no Comcast Sportsnet Memphis to sync up with. Embiid scored 13 points in 13 minutes, and I saw none of it live. It wasn't available to us. Shame on you, Comcast Sportsnet. I'm pretty sure you guys are making a decent profit. Quit pinching pennies and give us those Sixers preseason games.
Amen. All right. Well, hey, let's get this straight right from the beginning. I never blame the referees for losses or wins, for that matter. With that said, the Eagles-Lions game was probably the worst officiated game I've ever seen. Note, the Eagles should have still won the game. Honestly, I'm okay with missed holding calls and even not making questionable calls. But what I'm not okay with is not knowing the rules. The Darren Sproles chop block, the fumble which touched Jason Kelce out of bounds, and calling a penalty on a player, Connor Barwin, who wasn't on the field because you didn't know which team had the ball. This is inexcusable. The NFL is a multi-billion dollar business, played and coached by millionaires, yet officiated by part-time weekend employees. Per Money Magazine, the average NFL referee salary was $173,000 in 2013, and is set to rise to $201,000 by 2019. Remember, the NFL season only lasts about half the year, and for most NFL referees, refereeing is not their only job. The NFL prides itself on producing a top-of-the-line product. In order to do that, they need to improve the officiating.
Yes, indeed. 14 penalties for the Eagles, 2 for the Lions on Sunday. That just seems a little odd.
Well, they usually balance themselves out. But in this case, they certainly didn't. And like you say, some of them were just bizarre calls. You know, if you're not going to call that penalty on the Aguilar play on the interception, you know, because they're down there tussling, I'm kind of okay with that. Although it looked like it was interference, I'm okay with that. But when you call a chop block when a linebacker comes against a 5'6" running back, jumps up in the air, and you block him, that is not a chop block. The only other choice was to stand there and let him run right over top of you. That's not a chop block. That's not the rule, and that's a bad call.
I hear you. Hey, while we have 30 seconds that I can squeeze in here, how about that Chase Utley? Still the man, the big go-ahead game-winning RBI last night, and then a great play to end the game. Chase Utley, still the man, helping the Dodgers stay alive.
All right. Hey, Chet, one last comment. On our website, on the live tab, that we are live. You can listen through the website live by hitting that button. It's working. All is good, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. So, hey, as we get to the top of the hour, we'd like to thank our special guests, Arkansas Fred Barnett, Bill Meltzer, Fred Hugo, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, October 19th at 7 p.m. with 76ers insider Dean Lynam joining us. You can listen through our new website, phillypressboxradio.com, our Facebook page, or on the internet at blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio, or on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.